Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 14th. City budget to address growth. General fund budget will increase more than $10 million. Property taxes likely to increase. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland's general fund budget will increase more than $10 million, and city property taxes are also likely to increase. The Midland City Council held a budget workshop Wednesday, where they heard more about the proposed budget for fiscal year 2022-2023 and possible tax rates. The general fund is part of the city budget paid for by property tax, sales tax, and other fees. The proposed budget increases from $136 million this year to $148 million, an 8.7% increase. Other notables about the general fund budget include: personnel makes up 63% of expenditures, contractual services account for 25%. Fire and police departments both make up 26% of the budget. The other departments, accounting for 10% or more, are engineering, 14%, and community services, 10%. Budget priorities, according to the city, included maintaining and rebuilding service to the public, downtown development, critical water resources and infrastructure plan, quality of place improvements, improved transportation avenues, improving city facilities, and strategic final planning. The proposed balanced budget also promises increases to the number of police, firefighters, and other first responders budgeted. Also included are improvements to Hogan Park, Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park, the sports complex, senior service centers, MLK Center, City Hall, and fire stations. Councilwoman Lori Blong said she was encouraged that the city could accomplish what is needed with the proposed budget and the fund balance, emergency savings, that is proposed. She said that these are unique times in Midland, with inflation rates above and beyond what the nation is experiencing, and that Midland leaders need to be conservative in their planning. Property tax scenarios. The proposed property tax rate is 34.3 cents per $100 valuation. City officials cited a report from the Perryman Group that stated the taxes will increase by around $33 for the average home value in Midland, should the council use that tax rate. In 2021, according to the city, the average home value was $295,000. Combined with a tax rate of 36.7 cents per $100 valuation, that resulted in taxes of $1,083. For the upcoming fiscal year, the average home value, according to the Perryman Group, is said to be $325,000, according to the city. That translates to a tax bill of $1,116. While the tax rate will go down around 5%, the average value in this scenario increases by around the 10% cap. The tax rate, that is the no new revenue rate, is 33.3 cents per $100 valuation. That would bring in $1.7 million less than the proposed rate, according to city officials. Should city officials call for a higher rate than the proposed rate for 2022-2023, it would require voter approval. The city also reported that the assessed valuations are at a record high, $18.6 billion, that the proposed sales tax collection for fiscal year 2023 will increase to around $57 million, and the general fund balance would top $110 million for the second straight year. The city reported that the fund balance at the end of fiscal year 2021 was around $118 million. City officials estimate the fund balance could top $113 million at the end of this fiscal year. City officials appear ready to put more than $21 million in capital projects to help lower that fund balance amount. That includes $4 million for improvements to police headquarters and a police training facility, and $14.5 million for road improvements, the extension of Wadley Avenue in West Midland, the widening of Briarwood from Avalon to the east of State Highway 158 and right-of-way, and designed to update Mockingbird Lane. Scott Dufford, the dean of all council members, said it makes sense to keep a budget funded by a tax rate with 3% growth, which is typically less than population growth and inflation in Midland. He said that actions by the Texas legislature have reduced any flexibility that cities have from year to year when it comes to the tax rate. Budget calendar moving forward. The Midland City Council will establish a proposed tax rate on August 2nd. That proposed tax rate could be higher than the one ultimately approved. City officials noted that state law allows for a city to establish a higher rate and approve a lower rate, but a city can't establish a lower proposed rate and then approve one that is higher. On August 5th, the proposed budget is filed and posted to the city website. On August 23rd, there will be public hearings on the budget and tax rate, and have first readings on a budget ordinance and tax rate ordinance. On September 13th, second readings are scheduled for the council to adopt a budget ordinance and a tax rate ordinance. COVID numbers jump up this week. Midland Memorial reports double-digit inpatient totals. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health reported an uptick in COVID cases this week. After showing single-digit patients at Midland Memorial Hospital for most of the spring and early summer, the Midland Health website showed the number of COVID patients topped 10 this week. On Wednesday, that number of inpatients rose to 17, including 3 on ventilators. Midland Health officials said Wednesday that prior to July, there hadn't been 10 COVID patients at Midland Memorial Hospital since March 7th. Midland Health officials sent out the following response to the reporter telegram about COVID in the community. Quote, Midland Health has seen a recent uptick in COVID-19 cases and admissions. The virus circulating in our community is proving to be highly transmissible. The majority of those needing hospitalization are unvaccinated, or more than 6 months has passed since vaccination. We would advise everyone to get vaccinated, continue using precautions such as frequent hand washing, masking, and avoid large gatherings. In addition, if you are feeling ill, stay home and follow CDC guidelines for isolation. End quote. Midland Health officials also reported this week that there hadn't been a COVID-related death at Midland Memorial Hospital since March, and that the average age of those admitted in July has been 44 years old, the youngest average going back to March 2020. Also, the percentage of inpatients with COVID on Wednesday was 8.3%, according to the Midland Health. The organization's website still showed a 7-day average COVID occupancy percentage closer to 5%. The last time the occupancy percentage over 7 days topped 10% was late February. Medical Center Hospital in Odessa reported 15 COVID patients on Wednesday morning, including 4 in critical care. Permian giant Mewbourne isn't for sale after founder's death, CEO says. Founder's death spurs rumors of potential sale of producer. The story was written by Sheila Tobin of Bloomberg. Mewbourne Oil Company, the largest private oil producer in the U.S., said it will remain in the hands of its controlling family after the recent death of its eponymous founder. Curtis Mewbourne, who started the company 57 years ago and helped to grow it into one of the most active drillers in the nation, passed away in June. Quote, his family owns 100% of the company, and it'll remain that way in the years to come, Mewbourne president and chief executive officer Ken Waits said in an interview. His remarks come as a wave of consolidation radically reshapes the shale patch. Mewbourne, which controls choice acreage in the lucrative Permian Basin and runs as many rigs as supermajor ExxonMobil Corporation, would be an attractive candidate for a takeover as large producers, flush with cash from surging oil prices, seek out mergers and acquisitions to beef up their inventories of top-tier wells. Waits insists the Tyler-based company is not for sale, but said it is in a growth mode. Mewbourne added roughly 100,000 barrels a day of oil supply in the past year, equivalent to about 20% of total U.S. growth. And it isn't reining in its growth plans because of sky-high inflation or market volatility. Quote, we tend to make very long-term plans, said Waits, who has helmed the company for 10 years. What you saw from us for 57 years is what you'll see going forward, end quote. That makes Mewbourne an outlier in the shale landscape, where publicly traded producers are limiting production growth to maximize shareholder returns, and while private operators are expanding output in hopes of getting bought out by their larger public rivals. Quote, our scale matters right now, Waits said. The company has never been better positioned for success, end quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 14th. Jafar Jeff Rahim Salehi. On June 21st, Jeff Salehi had a perfect day full of his favorite things, sunshine, fruit, and playing with his grandson. On June 22nd, he unexpectedly passed away. Born in Iran in 1947, he was the middle of 5 children to Agdas and Ali Salehi. He arrived at JFK Airport in New York, not speaking any English. A bus drove him to the University of Kansas, where he would learn English and the American way. After graduating from KU, he set his sights on the oil business, going first to Texarkana and then Odessa College, where he would fall in love with the industry and people in West Texas. He went on to Texas Tech to finish his degree, as well as a master's degree in mechanical engineering. He met the love of his life, Deanne McAlpine, there, and they were married shortly after. Jeff is survived by his wife, Deanne, his daughter and son-in-law, Cameron and Winston Kelly, his 2 grandchildren. The family will receive guests on Thursday, July 14th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Branch at Nellie Pickle and Welch. A celebration of his life will be held Friday, July 15th, at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, with a reception to follow at the Racquet Club. His final resting place will be at his beautiful and beloved ranch in the Hill Country. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Vogel Center at Manor Park or the Midland Memorial Foundation. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Travis John Griffin, age 41, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, July 9th. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 16th, at the Broken Horn, located at 111 East County Road 132 in Midland. Travis was born on May 21, 1981, in Andrews, Texas, to Ricky Griffin and Anna Evinger. After moving around the state as a child, Travis made his home in Midland, where he met and married his soulmate, Susan, on June 15, 2006. Travis is survived by his wife, Susan Griffin of Midland, mother, Anna Evinger of Midland, siblings, Cody Griffin and wife, Sarah of Odessa, Anna and husband, Brad Marin of Canyon Lake, and Joseph LaViolette of Midland, kids Holly Neely, Hilary, and husband Zach Gould, and Colton Stewart, all of Midland, as well as several grandchildren. Travis is preceded in death by granddaughter Griffin Anderson, father Ricky Griffin, and grandparents Robert and Mary Ray, Houston Griffin, and Chester and Violet Evinger. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Andreas Cieniga Cardoza of Odessa died on July 11th in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Donald Dean Booth died July 9th in Midland. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim. I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, July 14th. Baby's father claims extreme anger issues. A 23-year-old man who acknowledged having extreme anger issues admitted he dropped his 7-month-old son while playing catch with him 3 days before the child died. Cameron Gamage and the child's 18-year-old mother, Layla Pearson, are now in the Ector County Jail having been arrested on suspicion of injury to a child. Odessa police received a 911 call about a baby who wasn't breathing at 12:52 p.m. Tuesday from the Brady Station Apartments in the 4200 block of East 52nd Street. When they arrived, they found the baby, who would have turned 8 months old on July 23rd, deceased with heavy bruising and swelling to the left side of his face and head and smaller bruises along the top of his cranium. An Odessa Police Department report details that Pearson told police officers she fed her son Logan around 5 a.m. Tuesday and woke up around noon to find him not breathing. She said she went to Gamage to wake Gamage up, but he took several minutes to get up, seeming uncaring, and asked her what she wanted him to do. After telling him to call 911, Gamage became apologetic and told her he hoped she wasn't mad at him, Pearson told authorities. Pearson told police Gamage has extreme anger issues and had recently strangled several dogs to death, according to the report. Gamage admitted to having problems with extreme anger and said the baby had been crying a lot and causing him additional stress, according to the report. He also admitted to strangling two dogs recently and disposing of their bodies to avoid getting into trouble. In Gamage's arrest affidavit, police wrote, Gamage remained unemotional and seemed to lack care about the incident throughout the contact. Initially, Gamage told authorities his son had hit his head on a hard portion of the interior of his crib, according to the report. Eventually, however, Gamage told police he and Pearson smoked marijuana on Saturday, and while Pearson was sleeping, Logan began to cry, so he decided to toss him into the air to get him to stop crying. Cameron claimed he accidentally dropped the infant after the fourth toss, which caused the infant to land on his left side, the report stated. Cameron reported the infant hit the floor hard when he landed. Gamage said he didn't tell Pearson what had happened because he was afraid of getting into trouble. Cameron reported the infant began acting unusual over the next couple of days, and when he saw the infant deceased this morning, his initial thought was something like he killed his kid, the report stated. Pearson told authorities that when she asked Gamage about the baby's injuries, he told her Logan had probably hit his head on a hard part of the crib, the report stated. She assumed his fussiness over the next few days was due to teething. According to the report, officers found dog feces on the floor and an otherwise disheveled apartment. Both Gamage and Pearson admitted to trying to clean up the mess prior to police arriving. The pair remained in the Ector County Jail. Gamage is being held on a $350,000 bond and Pearson on a $5,000 bond. Online jail records show Gamage is also being held on a sexual assault of a child charge out of Andrews County. According to the Andrews Police Department, they began investigating Gamage in August 2021 for offenses that were alleged to have occurred in 2019 and 2020 when the alleged victim was 15 years old. He was indicted on May 19th. In an interview Wednesday, Gamage's cousin, Brittany Pruitt, 27, of Andrews, said Gamage is facing a sexual assault count because he became involved with Pearson while she was a minor. Pruitt describes Gamage as an outgoing, funny man who loved his son. Up until he lost his job 46 weeks ago, he worked hard to provide everything he could for him, she said. He's a very trustworthy person, and I'm in complete shock because he took care of my kids, the mother of three said. The relationship between Gamage and Pearson has always been a rocky one, in part because of Pearson's age. Pruitt said Gamage moved to Odessa about 6 months ago and was living with his sister until 4 months ago when he reunited with Pearson, she said. They decided they wanted to work things out and be a family, Pruitt said. The three of them would often come visit her in Andrews, and because she knew they were struggling financially, Pruitt said she often would send them home with diapers, wipes, and a can or two of formula. Her cousin's siblings and mother live outside the Permian Basin, she said. All he cared about was working and making sure Logan had everything he needed, Pruitt sobbed. He'd go without eating so Logan could have food. While her cousin did have anger issues, Pruitt said she doesn't believe Gamage would have hurt the baby intentionally. He loved taking pictures of him. He loved him so much, Pruitt cried. I do believe it was an accidental death. We're all just in shock. We hope Logan gets the justice he deserves. But Cameron is not the way he's being portrayed. Texas Department of Family and Protective Services media specialist Paul Zimmerman via email said his department is investigating alongside law enforcement. There was no prior CPS history with the family, and Logan has no siblings. Both Gamage and Pearson have Facebook pages and Instagram accounts, and they each list themselves as being single. Pearson's last Facebook post, dated May 11th, is a meme showing three options: single, taken, or alcohol makes me happy, with the last one selected. Many of her posts are memes about troubled relationships, including one that says, "The scars you can't see are the hardest to heal." Her profile picture and her cover photo show Logan. On May 25th, she posted two pictures of Logan. Her air-filled post reads, "I love my little mans. You're growing so much, I don't ever want you to grow up. It's crazy how 5 months can go by." By 1 p.m. Wednesday, more than 100 strangers had commented on the post, the mass majority attacking her about Logan's death. Gamage has multiple Facebook pages. Like his Instagram photos, they mostly contain selfie pictures. Game room ordinance amended. The Odessa City Council voted 6-1 Tuesday night to amend the city's game room ordinance again, allowing game room owners and operators to keep more than 50 machines if they had more than 50 prior to May 1st. The council also voted to amend the ordinance so that moving forward, new game rooms will no longer be able to have tint of any kind on their windows. Back on May 1st, the council amended the existing game room ordinance because of the proliferation of game rooms throughout the city. The new ordinance states new game rooms can't operate within 1,500 feet of each other or neighborhoods, churches, and schools. The council also decided game rooms can only be located in light or heavy industrial areas and can't have more than 50 machines or have door or window coverings that prevent officers from being able to see their operations from the outside. The council voted to allow existing game rooms to operate under the old ordinance when it came to locations and zoning areas, but did not grandfather in the businesses when it came to tents and the number of machines until Tuesday night. Should existing businesses allow their business licenses to lapse, be suspended, or revoked, they will no longer be grandfathered, nor will those businesses that change their names or begin to operate under a new owner. Game rooms were placed on the agenda at the request of defense attorney Bobby Bland, who said several of his clients believe the game room ordinance is being applied inconsistently by Odessa police officers. While he is happy to argue in court on behalf of his clients, Bland said they thought it would be a good idea to bring the matter to the city attorney and city council, he said. In other matters, the city council voted unanimously to adopt a new 5-year plan for the city's park and recreation department, which Director Steve Patton said will soon be posted on the city's website. The 5-year plan sets goals. The goals include having parks equally distributed throughout the city, providing a diverse and equitable range of programs throughout the city, provide safe and accessible trails that are in harmony with the area's natural resources, and ensure the park system is fiscally sustainable. During a city council work study session last week, Aaron Tooley of HALFF Engineers recommended the city create a new 100-acre-plus sports complex to address serious lack of parks in Odessa. Tooley said the city has 3.9 acres of parks for every 1,000 residents, compared to 14.8 acres per every 1,000 acres in Amarillo. Tooley estimated such a complex would cost $28 million to $40 million, plus the cost of the land. The engineer also said the city needs 11 more softball fields and additional football and soccer fields. The city also needs to invest in improving conditions at its existing parks, noting many of its parks have been given a grade of C, he said. Patton noted Tuesday that Tooley never mentioned an important aspect of the 5-year plan, and that is, it is sustainable and will provide a quality of life that will encourage people to make Odessa a permanent place for families to live. The council voted 6-1 to enter into purchase agreements with Sewell Ford and Rush Truck Centers of Dallas for new vehicles, which won't arrive for 12 to 24 months because of chip shortage issues. All told, the expenditures will be roughly $1,010,274. City Council member Steve Thompson voted against the motion, stating he would rather spend all of the money with Sewell Ford because they are a local business. MCH OC to cover nursing school costs. To help remove barriers to joining the nursing and respiratory therapy field, Medical Center Hospital and Odessa College announced an agreement Wednesday to help cover the cost of tuition for students attending nursing school. The news conference was held in the boardroom of Medical Center Hospital. The agreement was approved by the Ector County Hospital District Board of Directors on June 7th, a news release detailed. MCH created an application process for students who are interested in having their tuition covered with a guarantee of employment for at least 2 years at MCH upon their graduation. Existing and new students enrolled in the OC nursing program are eligible to apply now for the MCH Nursing Scholarship. Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said University of Texas Permian Basin has an agreement with Medical Center as well. Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said the joint effort with Odessa College looks to our own community to meet our own healthcare needs and grow their own nurses and respiratory therapists. I can't tell you or express how excited I am about this, Tippin said. He added that one of his key phrases in life is that we are better together. When you work with partners and you work with people who have common goals and the love of community for Texas, for West Texas, for Odessa, that's how things get accomplished. A lot of people like to come into West Texas and tell us how to do things and how things should happen, but honestly, West Texas people care better for West Texas people, and we know what goes on. We all have a little sand in our teeth. We all know that we haven't had rain in 250 days or however long it's been, but I know this, and I've been a patient. Most of y'all have been a patient. If you haven't been, you will be, and I know how much better it makes our patients feel when they look up from the bed, or they're getting ready to go to sleep in surgery, or they're getting dialysis or whatever it is, when they speak to their nurse that their nurse is a Texan, and also that their nurse is a West Texan, and that their nurse is from the Permian Basin. I know that we're excited about that too, Tippin said. He added that there is a huge need for healthcare providers in the Permian Basin and that it only makes sense to join forces with OC to help fill that need. Medical Center's role is that is simple, and that was to say yes, and not only to say yes, but take down the barrier to make sure that when somebody wants to become a nurse, wants to become an LVN, wants to be an RN, wants to be a respiratory therapist, whatever it is, that we remove the barriers that we can to get them into a program, get them educated, and then put them in the workforce right here at Medical Center Hospital. So we're very excited about that, Tippin said. Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said she is an OC graduate. Almost 25 years ago, I made the step across that stage, and they handed me my nursing pin and my stethoscope and sent me on my way. And here I am at the hospital leading the charge and all of the nursing and clinical care that we give here. Nursing is the heart of healthcare, Timmons said. She added that a lot of people touch patients' lives every day, but the nurse is the most instrumental person in the life of patients and families. So to partner with Odessa College to support nurses, their growth and their career advancements is nothing short of very meaningful work for us here at Medical Center Hospital, Timmons said. Elisa Cornelius, Dean of the College of Health Sciences at OC, said this is not the first time the college has partnered with MCH. In 2021, MCH invested $5 million into the Wood Health Sciences building that is currently under construction. The building will include the Medical Center Health Systems Simulation Hospital because of that investment, she said. Our students are going to have a state-of-the-art, exciting, realistic place to train and become the basin's best healthcare professionals. Leadership also shows up in our classrooms. They show up in our clinical simulations to pour into our students. This is a priceless opportunity for our students to experience nursing leadership at Medical Center Hospital and form relationships with the people that will be their future supervisors and future colleagues, Cornelius said. At OC, we are about supporting our students and creating realistic pathways and affordable options to everyone to earn their degree. We understand that college is a commitment and that our students are dealing with life and all of the ups and downs that come with that. This scholarship opportunity doesn't just address the financial barrier for some of our students. It also aids in giving our students a home, giving them a sense of peace and belonging because they know where they're going after graduation, Cornelius said. Dippin said the hospital will create a dedicated fund for students and MCH will try to help as many students as they can. Timmons said some students may only have 6 months left to their training. I think we're willing to do just about all we can to get people in that program, Tippin said. He noted that the investment in the program is much less than bringing in a contract nurse. Turnover costs money and vacancies cost money, so we feel like our investment will be less than what we would spend in our current pattern. So we've got to get out of that pattern. We've got to fill those holes. Timmons said there are 600 to 650 nurses of all types, and there are 65 openings. There is a nationwide nursing shortage, and Timmons said nurses are the relay between the provider and the patient. We're the eyes and ears of everything that touches that patient, so they're very instrumental in the overall care that they deliver and the presence that they have in our organization, Timmons said. She added that there are not many respiratory therapist programs in the area, and they don't produce a lot. We have about 15 respiratory therapy openings, and that's on the conservative side, Timmons said. Currently, the closest program to Odessa is in Midland. Tyler Lowry, an LVN transitioning to registered nurse, works in case management as needed at MCH. She also is a wife and mother. She plans to work for MCH after she receives her RN, and she has applied for the scholarship. I did my LVN at Odessa College. I think it's a wonderful program. That's why I went back. I think the partnership with Medical Center is wonderful. I think it will help a lot of people who need this financial stress taken off them while they're in nursing school. Nursing school is very, very hard and very stressful, Lowry said. My kids take up a lot of my time. I love them. I try to give them as much time as I give my studying. I believe that I was supposed to be two things in life, and that was a mom and a nurse. I knew from a very young age that I was going to be a nurse. Life experience, a personal experience in my life, very young, made me know that nursing was what I was meant to do, she added. Murder trial continues in Ector County. Jurors spent an hour Wednesday listening intently to the testimony of Margaret Reeves, whose son is accused of murdering her husband 3 years ago. Reeves testified on behalf of her youngest son, Michael Schultz, but insisted she would not lie for him. Assistant Ector County District Attorneys Scott Turner and Ricky Ernest are attempting to convince jurors Schultz knowingly and intentionally killed Roy Eugene Reeves, 57, on October 28, 2019. Defense attorney Scott Lay is arguing Schultz stabbed Reeves 17 times while defending himself and his mother from an abusive alcoholic. A protective order Margaret Reeves had taken out against her estranged husband had just relapsed, and the incident took place shortly after Roy Eugene Reeves showed up at the house he once shared with her on North Lincoln Avenue, Lay told jurors. Throughout the trial, prosecutors have been referring to the deceased man as Eugene. All of the defense witnesses referred to him as Roy Wednesday. A clearly nervous and emotional Reeves told jurors she had met her husband through his mother while working at Dunlap's department store, and they lived together 4 years before marrying in 2006. They had a good marriage, and their blended families got along well with each other until her husband began to drink in 2014 following the loss of his daughter. His drinking led to the loss of his job, a wrecked truck, and in order to pay back $7,000 in unemployment he wasn't entitled to, Reeves said. It also led to abuse, she testified. He started pushing and shoving, mostly at first, Reeves said. The abuse got progressively worse, and she decided to file for divorce in September 2019 after her husband was arrested for domestic violence, Reeves said. Reeves testified she obtained an order of protection from her husband, and even though he wasn't allowed to live in the home they shared on North Lincoln Avenue, she moved out of the home because she remained frightened of him. However, her son Michael continued to live in a home on the same property, and she continued to give him rides to and from work. On October 29th, Reeves said she and her son arrived at the home on Lincoln to find cameras and motion detectors had been ripped off both of the homes. Strongly believing her husband had done the damage and would soon return, she called her daughter Tiffany and asked her to call 911 while her son went inside. Reeves told jurors she was starting to back up her SUV to leave when she realized her husband had pulled in and was blocking her with his truck. She got out of her car and asked him why he was there, believing the protective order was still in place and that he'd get into trouble, she said. He grabbed her upper arms. Reeves sobbed. His eyes were all black and he had blue eyes, Reeves cried. I knew something was wrong. I couldn't see the blue in his eyes. Her husband maneuvered her between the two vehicles, and her son confronted him, demanding she be set free, Reeves said. Her husband then grabbed her by the waist and trapped her against the truck, she said. Roy said, I've been waiting for you to come out to do this, Reeves said, saying she didn't know what that meant. Somehow she managed to break free, and she ran screaming to neighbors to call 911, she said. When she came back across the street, her husband was on the ground, apparently not breathing, Reeves said. She testified she lifted his shirt to check to see if he was breathing, and she saw all of the stab wounds. Reeves told Lay that despite the prosecutors had insinuated and despite what it looked like on the neighbor's surveillance video, she did not pick anything up off the ground to get anything out of her husband's truck. Although she didn't say much to police the night of the incident, Reeves said she later told a detective her husband had left a threatening voicemail where she was staying. Asked how she feels about her husband now, Reeves sobbed and said, I still love him. During his cross-examination of her, Turner pointed out that much of what Reeves testified she told authorities doesn't exist on body cam or other police recordings. Jurors have also been told there are no recordings of Roy Reeves grabbing Margaret Reeves that night. Speaking specifically about the black eyes comment, Reeves was adamant that she did relay that information to officers. I told all of the police who were pointing their guns at me, she insisted. She and Turner then got into a long back and forth about whether she told officers her husband had grabbed her that night. At first, Reeves insisted she did. Then she said maybe she didn't, before saying, I told everybody who asked me out there, and they didn't ask me. The trial is being presided over by retired Ector County District Court Judge Tyron Lewis. New OHS principal back in familiar territory. For Anthony Garcia, becoming principal at Odessa High School means a new job with new responsibilities, but at the same time, it's familiar territory. Garcia, who was most recently principal at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School, has been an assistant principal at OHS. "I'm excited to be here, excited to be back," Garcia said during a meet and greet Wednesday at the OHS Performing Arts Center. Garcia has been with Ector County ISD for 8 years off and on, including serving as a coach and special education teacher at Crockett Middle School, an assistant principal at OHS, and 3 years as principal at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School. He also taught in Lubbock. He replaces Mauricio Marquez, who is now an executive director for leadership. "It is familiar, the place is familiar, but the responsibilities are going to be a little bit different because of the added responsibilities," Garcia said. "If you combine all of the staff members," Garcia said, "there are 280 to 300 at OHS, with close to 4,000 students. There are 11 administrators total, including Garcia on campus. As an assistant principal at OHS, he was in charge of about 1,000 students. Wilson and Young has about 1,200 students. Having a strong team at OHS will also help. I think my previous experience of being an assistant principal and working closely with the district personnel, as well as having an opportunity to lead a campus already. I think my biggest preparation was probably being an assistant principal here at Odessa High School. Understanding the high school gives me a leg up," Garcia said. Originally from Abilene, Garcia earned an associate degree in general studies from South Plains College, an education degree from Texas Tech University, and a master's degree in educational leadership from Stephen F. Austin University. He said becoming OHS principal was the next step in his career. "When I first began in administration, I gave myself specific goals, knowing that I wanted to be a head principal on a campus. And once I had the opportunity to be a head principal at the middle school, my next step would be at the high school. I also have another goal, which I'd have set for myself, in that once I accomplish this goal, is to work downtown as an executive director of leadership to help coach principals. I want to be able to be someone that is a principal's coach and help lead campuses," Garcia said. "So it's a plan." He added that having the meet and greet is beneficial. "I believe it's helpful to get connected to the staff and community, having this opportunity to come and visit with people and chat a little bit gives everybody a little bit of a sense of who I am before the first day of school," Garcia said. Garcia said the ninth graders will return August 9th and 10th and all of their students on August 11th. Executive Director of Leadership Robert Cedillo said the meet and greet gets teachers familiar with their colleagues and the principal familiar with his or her staff. New teachers report July 29th and professional development for all teachers starts August 2nd, Cedillo said. "The effectiveness comes from just starting relationships with staff or teachers, the community," Cedillo said. Garcia and his wife, Melissa, have two children. Melissa is a counselor at Crockett Middle School. Alyssa Garcia is an instructional facilitator for ECISD and is working on her certification to become a teacher. Their son, Ace, is a junior at Permian High School and a varsity tennis player. "I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to work with Odessa High staff. I'm excited to work again with the community on the west side of Odessa because I've been on the east side for the past 3 years," Garcia said. He added that there are a lot of familiar faces and a lot of new faces, but that makes the transition well worth it, Garcia said. Three local students win essay contest. Six students receive prizes in a national competition among participants in the IDRA Valued Youth Partnership Program, a nationally recognized cross-age tutoring program. The VYP tutors wrote about how the program helped them do better in school and how they had helped their tutees to do better. Three of the winners are from Ector County ISD. First place high school winner, Lizbeth Rodriguez, 12th grade, Odessa High School, Ector County ISD. Second place winner, Jade Hernandez, 11th grade, Odessa High School, Ector County ISD. Third place high school winner, Rosalind Ortiz, 9th grade, Odessa High School, Ector County ISD. First place middle school winner, Selena Trevera, 8th grade, Dwight Middle School, South San Antonio ISD. Second place middle school winner, Elizabeth Sauceda, 8th grade, Dwight Middle School, South San Antonio ISD. Third place middle school winner, Matthew Hernandez, 8th grade, Dwight Middle School, South San Antonio ISD. There are competitions at both the middle school and high school levels in the United States. Winners from each competition are being awarded $200 for first place, $150 for second place, and $100 for third place, along with commemorative certificates and trophies. Quick Hits Immunization Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled Superhero Back to School Pre-K Immunization Clinic from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. today and July 28th. There will be an outdoor family fun-style resource fair from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Texas requires vaccines Tdap, polio, MMR, varicella, and Hep A, must qualify for TVFC vaccine, and provide updated shot record. For more information, call 432-498-4141 extension 0. Cooling Center. The City of Odessa has scheduled a cooling center for those who need a break from the heat from noon to 8 p.m. through today at Woodson Park, 1120 East Murphy Street. Dates may be extended if temperatures and demand warrant it. Visit tinyurl.com/ypk3kbu4. Dungeons and Dragons. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Dungeons and Dragons from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. today in the basement activity room. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. today in the Children's Department. All ages are welcome. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Southside Party on the Patio. Carla Latina has scheduled a Southside Party on the Patio at 6 p.m. today at 201 West Clement Street. There will be a food truck and music. Non-alcoholic drinks will also be available. Visit tinyurl.com/ykktf75h. Sea Creatures Scavenger Hunt. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a sea creature scavenger hunt through July. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Star Yard of the Month. Keep Odessa Beautiful is currently accepting Odessa Pride Star Yard of the Month nominations in August. Star Yard of the Month recognizes Odessa citizens who contribute to the overall aesthetic and health of the city by maintaining exceptionally clean and beautiful properties, both residential and commercial. Call 432-335-4686, email kob@odessa-tx.gov, or visit keepodessabeautiful.org. Obituaries for Thursday, July 14th. Benjamin Fuentes, 64, lost his battle to cancer on June 23rd At his home in San Antonio, he was born on August 23, 1957, in Salinas, California, to Herminio and Rodriga Fuentes. Ben is preceded in death by his father, Herminio Fuentes, mother, Rodriga Martinez Fuentes, brother, Mario Fuentes, and granddaughter, Lauren Ashley Keel. Ben is survived by his wife, Alyssa Fuentes of San Antonio, son, Jimmy Ben Herrera, and wife, Robin, of Hartsville, South Carolina, daughter, Tammy Allen, and husband, Danny, of Midland, Juanito Rodriguez and family of Odessa, Herman Fuentes and family of Odessa, Delia Dominguez and family of Snyder, 13 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and many 11 cousins, in-laws, and his medical center hospital family. A rosary will be held at 9 a.m. Friday, July 15th, followed by a Mass at 10 a.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Reception following church services at Holiday Inn, 5275 East 42nd Street, Odessa, Texas. Death notices. Donald Dean Booth, 88, died Friday, July 8th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Margaret Louise Henry Perkins, 74, of Odessa, died April 4th in Midland. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, July 14th at Martinez Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor George Brown is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Shannon Tom Miles, 53, of Odessa, died Sunday, July 10th in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Pamela Jane Pam Champion Price, 77, of Odessa, died July 22nd in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 19th at Nancy Fife Cordozier Gallery, located at the Charles A. Sorber Visual Arts Studio at the UTBB campus. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Diego M. Valenzuela, 34, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 13th in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 2 p.m. July 15th at Martinez Funeral Home and Chapel. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Joel C. Molina, 59, died Wednesday, July 13th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.